Our subject tonight is overcomers. 1 John chapter 2, verses 13 and 14. I write to you, fathers, because you have known him who is from the beginning. I write to you, young men, because you have overcome the wicked one. I write to you, little children, because you have known the Father. I have written to you, fathers, because you have known him who is from the beginning. I have written to you, young men, because you are strong, and the word of God abides in you, and you have overcome the wicked one. There's a number of commentators that believe, and apparently some Bible translators believe, that verses 12 through 14 are part of a hymn from the first century. I'm saying that most translators must believe that because it's printed differently in a lot of newer translations to indicate something a little different about it. And it would work for a hymn. But our text shows the old conflict of man and Satan. I think you could see that in there. And we see that there are those who gain the victory, and they do this by overcoming. It's good to think about the whole concept of overcoming something. A lot of times there are individuals who have overcome things in life, things perhaps that they've had some kind of a problem or a handicap that they had when they were born, and they've managed to overcome this. And sometimes we see that there are individuals who overcome hardship of life. Sometimes people overcome perhaps not being born and not living in the best of circumstances, and they overcome this. Or individuals who have chosen to live a certain lifestyle that's, well, for lack of a better word, a disaster. And yet they manage to overcome in that sense. And when we see the ones who are really overcomers, we have this good feeling about them. We think to ourselves, here's someone who's really taken hold of things, made the effort, and was successful in overcoming whatever it was that was before them. The New Testament teaching is clear throughout the Bible that there is a reward for those who overcome, just like there's punishment for those who don't overcome, but rather they succumb to whatever problem might be before them. One of the things that you find, and we're going to be spending quite a bit of time in the book of Revelation, if you'd like to turn over there to that in advance. The idea of overcoming is prominent in the book of Revelation, especially in the first part, in the first three chapters. You find a lot of things over there. And that's what we're going to look at here for just a moment or two. Now, there were seven churches of Asia Minor that letters were written to them, and they're recorded in actually in chapter 2 and 3. There was a church at Ephesus, the church at Smyrna, the church at Pergamum, a church at Thyatira, the church at Sardis, church at Philadelphia, church at Laodicea. Now, all these churches' actions, we find, were manifest. In other words, they were well known. Each one of these churches had something said to them that proves this. And the statement that you find in all seven of them now is that I know your works. Well, that's told at the beginning of the instructions that were received. You can see chapter 2, verse 2, verse 9, verse 13, verse 19, chapter 3, verse 1, 8, and 15. It's right there in everyone. I know your works. And indeed, God would know all works, not just works that the churches were doing at this particular time or just those particular churches. But he knows all the works. He knows all that's being done all the time, everywhere. That's the idea of God being omniscient. He's all-knowing. Now, not only is that said to each church, but they were also encouraged to heed the word. For example, in chapter 2 of Revelation and verse 7, he who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. Now, this is something that's repeated to each and every one of them. So they were encouraged to heed the word.
Now, let me also point out that that heeding the word, that doesn't necessarily just mean to hear the word. It does mean that, but it means to hear the word and pay attention to it and also follow it. Now, all three of those things, that's what heeding the word means. And so you see this, and you hear what the Spirit says to the churches. Chapter 2, verse 7, verse 11, 17, 29, and chapter 3, verse 6, 13, and 22. So you've got all those things. And likely, if a person has read the book of Revelation or tried to read it, I'll be honest with you, probably up to chapter 5, the book of Revelation is fairly easy to read and to understand. After that, the symbolism becomes heavy and it becomes perhaps a little more difficult, a little more challenging. I think it could be done. I don't think the book of Revelation is the hardest book in the Bible to understand. There are others, in my opinion anyway. But if anybody has done this and read, you know, at least chapters 2 and 3, you've probably noticed, you know, that there are things that are said, that there's a pattern to writing to each one of the churches. So I know your works, and, you know, let him that has an ear to hear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. Now, the other thing that you find to each one of these churches is that they're encouraged to overcome. And the idea of overcoming with in order to gain something. Now, that's what it is. And really, if we stop and think about it, even in the world, you know, outside of religious senses and other things like that, and religious operations and so on, there is an idea of overcoming. You know, you're looking to gain something by this. It just doesn't matter, you know, what it is in particular. If you're a student in school, perhaps it's being able to overcome something relative to mathematics or some course of study or whatever it is. You know, you're looking to get a grasp of this so you can overcome it. And there's just a lot of things like this in life. And even if there's some physical thing that we're talking about, you know, people are looking for certain milestones or some kind of a rite of passage in which there's something that's overcome. I think probably, if we think back at this, and I'm starting to see it now, and my oldest granddaughter is 13 years old this past August. And it's amazing, in the last year, she's gone from being, I don't know, 6 or 7 inches shorter than her mother to look at her mother right in the eye. And, of course, Jenny's alarmed by this because it means her little girl's really growing up, and she is. And, of course, you know, Haley sees this and recognizes, you know, how much taller she's getting and so on. And she's in a hurry to grow up. And that's how it is, isn't it? When you look at children that are, say, junior high level, they begin there in a hurry to grow up. They're in a hurry to become an adult. And that continues down through high school and et cetera, until they reach some milestone. I don't know what that is anymore. I don't know whether it's 18 years old or 21 or something, you know. But they've got something in sight where that's going to be a rite of passage. You know, I'll overcome being a kid and I'm now a grown-up. And that's a big thing. Of course, they're going to find out that later on, some 40 or 50 years down the road, you look back with a winsome eye toward being 13 and so on and wish that you were still a child and so on. But anyway, they look to overcome this. It's a big thing. And yet they think that they are gaining something. And indeed they are. They're gaining a lot of things. And they find out that, well, responsibility and other things like that come with getting older and becoming an adult. Now, these individuals here in the churches of Asia Minor in the book of Revelation, they were encouraged to overcome in order to gain something. And I think if we'll look at what they were encouraged, how they were encouraged to overcome and what they were going to gain, we can probably
see that these are things that we ought to be looking to gain to in overcoming ourselves. For example, in Revelation chapter 2, to the church at Ephesus in verse 7, it says, "To him who overcomes, I will give to eat from the tree of life, which is in the midst of the paradise of God." I don't think there's any question about it. When you look at this, it's talking about being in heaven, being with God, eternal life. But that's to someone who overcomes, you see. Then you drop down to verse 11, and it says here, "He who overcomes shall not be hurt by the second death." All right, well, it kind of means the same thing, doesn't it? And then you go to verse 17, and it says, "To him who overcomes, I will give some of the hidden manna to eat, and I will give him a white stone, and on the stone a new name written, which no one knows except him who receives it." So there's the hidden manna, there's a white stone, there's a new name, and it's talking there about privileges and identification, all things that are new and think privileges that just aren't available to everyone. Well, we can understand how that would work. Then also chapter 2, and this is actually, there's two places, verse 26. "To him who overcomes and keeps my works until the end, to him I will give power over the nations." And then there's a quote from Psalms in verse 27. And verse 28, "And I will give him the morning star." So power over the nations, I don't think that would mean physical power or anything like that, but superiority over the nations and the worlds round about, and indeed spiritual life is that. And the morning star, well, the morning star was used in old days as a guide, something that you steered yourself toward. Well, after steering yourself toward this, then it finally becomes yours, and there's something that's realized. In chapter 3, in verse 5, it says, "He who overcomes shall be clothed in white garments, and I will not blot out his name from the book of life, but I will confess his name before my Father and before his angels," clothed with white raiment, showing purity, acceptance. The name's in the book of life, and then he's confessed before the Father and angels. Jesus said that the one who would confess him before men, I will confess before my Father in heaven. We can understand that. But now, again, let me pause. All these things are relative to overcoming. Now, another one here in chapter 3 and in verse 12, "He who overcomes, I will make him a pillar in the temple of my God. And he shall go out no more, and I will write on him the name of my God and the name of the city of my God, the new Jerusalem which comes down out of heaven from God. I will write on him my new name." Several things there. Made a pillar in the temple, and he's going to go out no more, and no need to do that. This is a place of permanent residence where you'll be bearing the name of God, New Jerusalem, the name of Christ. All these things will take place. And then finally, in chapter 3 and verse 21, "To the one who overcomes, I will grant to sit with me on my throne, as I also overcame and sat down with my Father on his throne." And so ultimately, there's reigning with Christ. And probably, when you look at all these and consider them, they're really kind of a continuation of things. And some of them, you know, you see them kind of maybe going up a little bit, a little notch or so, just a little bit at a time until you finally come down here to the last one. But now, I want to emphasize, it'd be real easy to get led off on this and say, come along here. And, oh, well, look, you know, we're going to write on them the new name and get all focused on that. And what's that mean? And this and that and the other. Where's it going to be written? It's on the forehead, on the arm, and just get carried away with it. It would be easy to do, wouldn't it? And miss the whole point that all these things, and good and great that they are for those who will overcome. I think that was something that was necessary in the first century. in first century times when they were enduring a lot of things entirely different than what we faced. I mean, you know, we can see evidence of real persecution. All kinds of it. And you're going to have to be faithful. You're going to have to overcome this. As Christianity went along in the first century, persecution and just outright hatred of Christians, it shifted from the Jews, and especially after the destruction of Jerusalem, Christians just got, you know, the lion's share of hatred from pagans. And they really needed to hear words and of encouragement to overcome. And I think to myself about how that was then. And how does that relate today? It's not easy being a Christian today, is it? It's not. We're just about inundated with everything that you can think of. We hear God mocked, scorned, ridiculed, blasphemed. Just seems like on a regular basis. It just seems like that there are people in media, entertainment, whatever it is, that just can't wait to push some kind of senseless blasphemy and irreverence of God right in your face. Sometimes it's just overwhelming. I remember one time we were meeting at Shoals. We met in the store building, right on the street of town, you know. And one night, right about the end of services, there was some boy there in town that opened up the door and just let out a whole stream of profanity. Now, why did he do that? What was the point in doing that? I mean, was somebody in town going to give him some kind of an award? You know, was he going to be taken to Washington, D.C. and get the Presidential Medal of Freedom for this? What's the point of it? I'm being sarcastic, I mean it. What's the point of all that? I don't really know. And he probably didn't know either. But, oh, they're religious people in there, so let's open up the door and just give them a blast of something. Like that. We all heard it. And that's what we deal with. That kind of thing. And more. You know, we don't have much to say in what goes on with the laws and the lawmakers in our country, but they make laws and allow things, and you know, it just goes against everything that we believe. And I suppose that there may come a time whenever it feels like we might as well just throw our hands up and surrender, just give in to the whole thing. Well, it may feel like that, but we're told in the Bible, be overcomers. Things in the first century, whatever it was, had to overcome that. How about 6 or 7 centuries later? Would they still not have to overcome whatever came along? How about 20 centuries later? We still have to overcome whatever comes along our way in order to gain something. And God has shown great and wonderful things to gain for those who are overcomers. So I think that this is something that's very relevant for us, you know, to consider and to take, you know, these things as words of encouragement. Because the things that they were told are, I think we can make some very, very, very good applications of this and find some, you know, relevance to it even today. Now, how is overcoming possible? I'm sure that's a question that we might consider. Revelation chapter 12 and verse 11. It says there that they overcame him. Now, that would be back there. The him is in verse 9. It's identified for us. The great serpent of old, called the devil and Satan, casts out the whole world. Deceives the whole world, casts the earth, it was cast down. That's who it is. And it says that they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony, and they did not love their lives to the death. In other words, they didn't love life more than their faith. And there's how that's done. So you overcome by the blood of Christ. You overcome by Jesus. You're not going to be able to overcome by yourself. You're going to have help. And the help has been provided. And how is the devil defeated? You think about that. Well, it's by the blood of Christ. How's the devil defeated on this? Well, how about going back to the words of Jesus when he instituted the Lord's Supper in Matthew chapter 26? In verse 28, it says that the blood was shed for the remission of sins. Now just tell me, when Jesus' blood was shed to bring about the remission of sins, was that not overcoming the devil who had the power of sin? Yes, it was. You don't have to be held a slave to this anymore. That you can break free, you can overcome it. And forgiveness is something that's possible. In Romans chapter 5 and verse 9, we're told that we are justified by His blood. Now the word justified, or justify, however you want to look at it, in New Testament language, was a word that was taken from the legal field. And it was used in the legal field that in the case of a trial, someone would be pronounced guilty or not guilty. And if they were declared not guilty, then the word that was used to declare them not guilty is the word that's translated as justified in your New Testaments. So when it says we've been justified by His blood, we've been declared not guilty by His blood. Now that doesn't mean that perhaps we've never done anything wrong. That's not the point at all. But it's pardon for our sins and to be declared not guilty. Hebrews chapter 9 and verse 14 says, how much more, now this is in comparison to the blood of bulls and goats and of the Old Testament, how much more shall the blood of Christ, who through the eternal Spirit offered Himself without spot to God, now watch, cleanse your conscience, or purge your conscience, from dead works to serve the living God. So the blood of Christ does what? Well, it purges our conscience from dead works. You know, the place where I used to work, we had these enormous gas burners. I mean, they were huge. They were bigger than a jet engine. They were big. They were as long as this building, and they were big enough that you could get inside. I wouldn't advise getting inside of them, even when they were cool. But you could get inside one of them and stand up. And there were some that were shorter, but we had a couple of them as long as this room is in this building here. And when they would have, you know, the fire burning in them, you could look in this little peephole. I mean, it was really something. I mean, the fire went clear down to the end of it. It would get up the internal temperature on those two big ones would be 600 degrees. Now, it wasn't that when it finally was blown out and the heat was used, but that's the heat of it. Now, when one of those things was shut off, you waited for it to cool. We had fans that blew air in, blew air out, so as it blew air in to be consumed by the fire, it would also then cool the chamber. But then also, they had lights on this. And they were part of the purge system. Now, they were gas-fired, you see. And so before anything could be done and anything could enter into that, man or tool or anything, you had to wait until that purge light came on. When the purge light came on, it meant that all the gas in there was gone. It's safe now. We're talking about purging or cleansing the conscience. It's getting things out, eliminating things, purging the conscience, so it's safe now, from dead works. Our focus isn't on those things anymore. Our focus is on good things, living works, the works of God, and doing the works of God. And so the blood of Christ has allowed our conscience, what goes on in here, to be purged from dead works, and provides us, through the Word, with a number of things that will help us focus on good works. And also in 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 18 and 19, knowing that you were not redeemed with corruptible things like silver or gold from your aimless conduct received by tradition from your fathers, but with the precious blood of Christ, as of a lamb without blemish and without spot. We're singing that song. Since I have been redeemed tonight. Good song. I thought, well, that goes along with the point here. So this is how overcoming is possible. It's by the blood of Christ. We don't do it ourselves. All things have been made available and possible that we can overcome. And then, you know, as we mentioned, that overcomers are looking to gain something. So, well, you think about this, and you know, and sometimes you run into someone who thinks, boy, it's just a... They look at the idea of being a Christian as some kind of an overbearing task, if you will. I know in 1 John, it talks about, you know, about the love of God. It says, this is the love of God, that we keep His commandments. And then there's that little bit at the end of it that says, His commandments are not grievous. Newer translations have, His commandments are not burdensome. Have you ever run into somebody who thought that the commandments of God were grievous or a burden? Have you ever? Oh, my goodness. Look at everything it takes to be a Christian. Well, it takes some things to be a Christian. That's right. It doesn't take much to be a sinner. Just let yourself go. Just you know, open yourself wide open and let the world come in. You don't have to do much to be a sinner. But you do to be a Christian. So we'll agree with that. And to those individuals who've gone all through their life not trying to overcome anything, I'm sure it looks grievous and sounds like a real burden. And they'll say, well, why do it? What's the point of it all? What is it really? I think sometimes, whenever there are those who have bought into the idea that the church is some kind of a club or something, you know, like a Christ club or something, you know, where there's a membership ritual, and then you become, you know, part of it, and think of it that way, and you know, and the whole idea, the whole concept of spiritual matters is just gone. They may have done the right things, but you know, why were they doing this? Were they seeking to overcome? Oh, they were seeking to be members of something that's perhaps beneficial. I worked with a man one time back when I was in the Christian church, and I'm telling you, this was one of those fellows that was, you know, I met a lot of them, but he may have been one of the most profane men I've ever met. You know, just everything about him. I mean, he couldn't tell. If you ask him what the time was, the time of the day, he'd have to tell you and include some profanity with it. So one day he was walking along, and I was doing my job, actually, and he happened to be walking by, and he stopped, and we talked for just a little bit. And he said, well, I understand that you're going to the Christian church all the time now. And I said, well, yeah. I don't know how he found out, but yeah, you know, I'm not going to lie about it. He said, yeah, he said, I'm a member of the Christian church in Ligoti. And after I got up off the floor, I just couldn't believe it. And I said, well, Virgil, I'm just, you know, astonished. He said, really? I said, yeah. I said, don't take offense, but I never would have guessed. And I said, I suppose a lot of people that way. He said, my wife's been a member there for years and years and years. And he was on in years, about retirement age. He said, I'll tell you why I'm a member there. I thought, okay. By this time now, there was no profanity, thank goodness. But he said, I'm a member there because one of these days I'm going to pass away. And my obituary will be in the paper. And when people read my obituary, it'll say that I was a member of the Christian church. That's why my name's in there. I guess he was looking for something to gain, as little as it was. But he missed the whole point, hadn't he? Of what church is about. Even in the Christian church's misunderstood, misapplied understanding of the church, they still wouldn't go for something like that. But are there people like that in the Lord's church that treat it frivolously, that they think that there is something to gain, but it's nothing as what the Scriptures actually say. So why overcome? Why do that? Well, first of all, the answer should be easy, and I'm not going to go over them all again, but it would be to obtain many of the benefits that we previously mentioned under the first point that you find in chapter 2 and 3, to those who overcome. Look at all those things over there. Spiritual rewards of an eternal nature. Sure. But why overcome? Why go through all this that people who have their head and heart full of the world thinks is so grievous and so burdensome? Why to do this? Well, the answer is pretty simple to word it out, and that is to go to heaven when this life is over. That's what it's all about. I had a man that was up here at the clinic, in Cleveland Clinic. He had lymphoma. He's from West Virginia. I went up to see him. And I remember, long before he ever got that illness, if you ask him, you know, why are you a Christian? His answer was, I want to go to heaven and see God. I thought, pretty good answer. And when I saw him in the hospital, and he had family members in there, he passed away while he was in there. And come in there and, you know, what do you say? Somebody's terminal. I walked in there and I said, Bob, I said, how are you doing? He said, I'm getting ready to meet God. That's how I'm doing. I thought, well, you're consistent with your answers, aren't you? But we want to go to heaven when this life is over. That's why. And when we think about that and think about what's necessary to make that possible, it's not grievous. It's not burdensome. We're told in Revelation chapter 22 and verse 14, blessed are those who do His commandments, that they may have the right to the tree of life and may enter through the gates into the city. So it's for those who are obedient. Now, some translations have those who have their robes washed in the blood or washed white or something along that line. Well, it means the same thing. So the obedient. Back in chapter 21, verses 3 and 4, I heard a voice from heaven saying, behold, the tabernacle of God is with men. And He will dwell with them, and they shall be His people. God Himself will be with them and be their God. And God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There shall be no more death, nor sorrow, nor crying. There shall be no more pain, for the former things have passed away. Now we understand, you know, you might think in verse 3 that's talking about something that's going to happen here in this realm. But then when you get to verse 4, you realize, well, no, it's really not. That verse 3 means that it's available. And then verse 4, you know, goes into a description of what it's going to be like. So, to be with God in heaven, that's right. I think about what Bob had to say. I want to go to heaven and see God. Have you ever thought about that? You know, we're told in the Scriptures no one's ever seen God except the Son. Moses, we're told, saw His hind parts. That's what the King James Version says. I have no idea what that means. What are the hind parts of God? Does anybody know? No one knows. They'll make a guess or speculate and so on. That's as close. Has anybody got to actually seeing God? But now for the one who's faithful, the one who overcomes, to be in the presence of God, to be there where the throne is. I just can't imagine anything. There's nothing on the face of this earth that compares to that. How great and glorious that would be for those who overcome. In chapter 21 also, down in verse 7, to be heirs of glory. He who overcomes shall inherit all things. and I will be his God, and he shall be my son. We can become heirs of glory. What a wonderful thing to contemplate that. Take your songbooks and turn to the song that's been selected. We'll be singing that in just a moment. I think that in all that you find in the book of Revelation, chapter 5 has always kind of stood out for me from all other things that are said in the entire book. So let me just read that at this time, where it says, I saw in the right hand of him who sat on the throne a scroll written inside and on the back, sealed with seven seals. Then I heard a strong angel proclaiming with a loud voice, who is worthy to open the scroll and to loose its seals? Now watch. And no one in heaven or on the earth or under the earth was able to open the scroll or to look at it. And so I wept much. I'd say so. Because no one was found worthy to open and read the scroll or to look at it. But here we go, a transition. One of the elders said to me, do not weep. Behold, the Lion of the tribe of Judah, the Root of David, has prevailed. Has he overcome? To open the scroll and to loose its seven seals. And I looked, and behold, in the midst of the throne and of the four living creatures, in the midst of the elders, stood a lamb, as though it had been slain, having seven horns and seven spirits, which are the seven, or seven eyes, which are the seven spirits of God sent out into all the world. And then he came and took the scroll out of the right hand of him who sat on the throne. And when he had taken the scroll, the four living creatures and the 24 elders fell down before the Lamb, each having a harp and golden bowls full of incense, which are the prayers of the saints. And they sang a new song, saying, you are worthy to take the scroll and to open its seals, for you were slain and have redeemed us to God by your blood out of every tribe and tongue and people and nation, and have made us kings and priests to our God. And we shall reign on the earth because of the Lamb, the one who is worthy. And then I looked, and I heard the voice of many angels around the throne, the living and the creatures and the elders. And the number of them was 10,000 times 10,000 and thousands of thousands. And they were saying with a loud voice, worthy is the Lamb who was slain to receive power and riches and wisdom and strength and honor and glory and blessing. And every creature which is in heaven and on the earth and under the earth, and such as are in the sea and all that are in them, I heard saying, blessing and honor and glory and power be to him who sits on the throne and to the Lamb forever and ever. And the four living creatures said, amen. And the 24 elders fell down and worshiped him who lives forever and ever. What words, what a scene. When the book is opened, will my name be found written there? I'm not worthy to open it. The Lamb will open that book. Will my name be written there? It will be if I'm an overcomer. It will be if I've obeyed the gospel. If I've believed in the Lamb that was slain, if I believed in what He died for, and that I want to associate myself with that by believing in Him, and I want to obey Him, and I'll repent of my sins, and I'll be baptized, that I can have the forgiveness of my sins. I'll overcome sin through Jesus, and all those things will be mine. And the one who's worthy to open that book, I'll be in His presence too, in heaven, as an overcomer. So be an overcomer and obey the gospel today. Have your name written in the book, Lamb's Book of Life. And if we can help you to do that, We'd be happy to do so. If you're subject to the gospel invitation, why don't you come all together? We stand and sing.